On this edition of the Car Jam podcast.
I had one put on called Wang Kong.
It was only one letter missed. Anyway,
Yeah, they saw me coming. Yeah.
I think... You look mystified. That makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, I'm just thinking
just
about...
just my face. I'm not.
That's his natural resting face.
Yeah. I've just gone into standby for a moment there. The light's still on.
No, that was it.
That was it. Sorry.
I'm done. Thanks, anyway, everyone. Thanks. See you next week.
Thanks for joining us.
I'm off.
Just the one question, it's really easy.
That was much simpler than I thought.
Tony, put on a smile, put on the kettle, and for goodness sake, put on some trousers. We've got a guest. It's Ben Field, Managing Director of Vintage Tyres. Hello, Ben.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. Very welcome. Okay, thank you. Yeah, we're... It's nearly Christmas, and things are a tad quiet. We are quite seasonal, so yeah, waiting for the phone to ring. But
not a lot of people getting tyres for Christmas then?
Strangely not. I've tried that endlessly. Gift vouchers, all the rest of it. People just don't want tyres for Christmas.
I can't believe
it. You can put bows around them and everything. No one's interested.
Love that.
Would you?
If I went that Christmas morning and there were five brand new tyres under the tree, I would be made up. I love getting car parts.
You know, I'm the same. I'd be fantastic. But, you know, yeah. Well, we can make that work for you if you like. You know, we can do something there.
That is why you're here.
I know.
For blags.
Go on, Tony, sorry. Guessing what the gift is part of the joy of Christmas. I'm suspecting, number one, the shape of the gift may well somewhat give it away under the tree. Secondly, you need a pretty big tree to stuff a set of 4018s underneath. And thirdly... part of the joy of Christmas is coming down and the smell of the Christmas tree. I'm suspecting that may be somewhat detracted by the smell of rubber.
Very possible. It depends how well you wrap it, of course. If you wrap it up nicely in several layers, put it in a box, maybe. But it does stink. New rubber does smell.
It does depend if you spend Christmas wearing a gimp suit as well.
each their own. Everyone is a hobby, I guess.
Maybe I'm revealing too much.
That took a turn.
A touch.
Would you mind not revealing anything, Mike?
No, can't promise.
Tyres, you're right. I love it as well at Christmas and birthday. You know, actually, my birthday just gone was good because I just invested in another couple of cars. And so, you know, the question was, what do you want for your birthday? Well, the answer is basically anything with that branding on will make me happy. So my birthday was terrific. I had books and, you know...
Awesome.
The pin badge things, you know, which I got... one of them with a collection of, well, Saab, it's no great secret, but all their brand logos from the beginning in pin badges. Now, that's incredibly exciting, and I loved opening that as a gift. Problem is, I haven't opened it since because I don't know what to do with them.
What you need is a denim jacket with some lapels. You stick it on the lapels. That's the cool look. It's very sort of retro look. That's what I would do. Back in the day, that's the look you need to go for.
We've only just got Tony out of denim, to be honest.
So that was like denim and rubber. Where next?
20 years on. Looking like Shaking Stevens was too much. So I suppose, you know, bring it round to tyres a little bit.
Good idea. Yeah, let's do that.
Now, I've got various friends who are far better drivers than I, and they invest in winter tyres when winter comes along. What's an advantage of a winter tyre? What is the difference? I've never really known what a winter tyre gives you. If I put winter tyres on my car in November and then it's sunny for all the entire month, as if it's summer, I mean, am I going to notice a difference? Am I, you know, what's the sort
of... Yeah, because it's colder. Ultimately, a winter tyre, two things. It's got a softer compound, so it grips better. It's got a higher silica compound, helps the grip. And it's got little tiny sipes in the tyre. And the tread design is designed basically to eat in sort of... into ice, snow, damp, basically. They're just much more effective. They work much better when it's cooler. And you could run them on all year round. A lot of people do, actually. It's a cheap alternative to a soft, fast road tyre. It's because they are a decent amount softer, 10-15% softer than a regular summer tire. But to be honest with you, most
people...
Are
they going to wear faster?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit.
If they're softer...
But most people... Go on, sorry, Karen.
No, that was it.
That was it. Sorry.
I'm done. Thanks, anyway, Simon. Thanks. See you next week.
Thanks,
see you,
thanks for joining us.
I'm off. Right, thanks.
Just the one question. It's really easy.
That was much simpler than I thought. Mostly what people are doing now, what we recommend, unless you're in sort of the far north of Scotland or a really cold, cold place, all the time, we suggest an all-season tyre is the best thing you can do. If you're running a modern car, don't bother with winter tyres, typically. All-season tyres, pretty much the same price as summer tyre, and they do as good a job. They've got the three-peak mud and snow, etc. on there. You can drive them in countries in Europe that need to have a winter tyre in winter. Happy days. That's the way forward. Because I used to be, as a bit of a rubber fan, not much as you, Mike, but
no.
In that sense, but it's a bit of a tyre nerd. I, long before I started here, I was the man with two sets of wheels, winter, summer, and it's fine, and it made a real difference. But actually, these days I run all seasons, all year, and they're perfect on my modern stuff.
My experience, to answer you, Mike, you know, as the expert here.
I wasn't asking you, Tony.
Oh, no, good point, but I'm going to answer anyway. I've done my history. It's very similar to Ben, actually. I used to run winters and summers, and I bought a separate set of wheels and a brand new set of winter tyres. Now, it was exactly as you said, Mike. I put them on in, I don't know, November, having had a lousy winter the year before. And I commute into London. Did it snow? Did it heck it's like? Did it rain? Well, barely. Was it cold? No, absolutely not. So these winter tyres and wheels were absolutely pointless. Anyway, it got to the end, and the end of winter. And so time to sell the car, obviously. So the car went, and then I'd left with these wheels and tyres with nearly brand new. So I put them on eBay because everyone at work said, Tony, you've got to sell these things on eBay. And I said, I really don't want to. Anyway, I put them on eBay and I thought, these things will go no problem. Four nice wheels, four nearly new winter tyres, branded, you know, kind of Michelin or something.
Yeah.
And I didn't put a reserve on. Unbelievably, they went for like 10 quid.
Oh,
I mean, I woke up in the morning and looked at the result. £10 or something like that. I thought, do you know what? I'm going to let the sale go through, you know, because that's the right thing to do. Well, a guy turned up in a Mercedes in an S-Class and said, Ty, you know, I'll come to pick up the wheels and tyres. He said, but, you know, are you sure? I said, yeah, of course. You know, that. Well, that's the deal. You know, that's what happened on eBay. You got a bargain. He said, oh, I really did. He was so nice. I wasn't expecting it. He said, I feel so bad. I've brought you a bottle of wine.
Oh, decent. That's very kind.
Was it
a decent bottle of wine?
Yeah, it wasn't. It was, actually. Yes, I Googled it when I got in. Yeah, it was. It wasn't Aldi's Fiver stuff. But yeah, I got a bottle of wine and 10 quid for a set of tyres and wheels. But anyway, everyone walked off happy. But so I have converted as well to all season. And to reinforce what you're saying, Ben, I think personally they're better because they're slightly softer compound, so you get a slightly nicer ride. I find them quieter. I don't know whether that's accurate or not, but yeah, we got some head scratching there. You can answer that in a moment. But also one set I got 45,000 out of, so I don't think they last, you know, any less.
No, they're not. They're certainly not as soft as a pure winter tyre, but they are what I call them the classic British compromise. We never ever bought, literally or figuratively, winter tyres as a nation. All seasons are the fastest sector at the moment in growth. They're brilliant, and it is. I think that's probably the way ones should go. I don't know why manufacturers aren't putting those on a standard on most cars. I really don't get it because you don't. It's safer. It's simply safer, particularly in our climate. We are designed for that all because we could have four seasons in in literally an hour.
Yes.
I mean, it's never mind in one day, literally in an hour, I've seen pretty much every form of weather. If you've got the right tyre on, you're safer.
Yeah, if you don't like the weather, wait a minute.
I think there's a lot of people, if you've got like an M-Series BMW, this is no offence to M-Series BMW drivers at all, but they might say, well, I must have Pilot Sport 5s. Got to have them. It's got to be the best, the absolute high performance tyre. How often are they driving that car at its full potential?
Mm-hmm.
Do they not? Are they ever? We can't do more than 40.
No.
So, that's a lot.
Well, it's not only driving it to its maximum, but also the maximum of the conditions and surface. So that condition and surface needs to be 100%. Well, that ain't never the case,
It's not. And the surface actually isn't a factor. Potholes, obviously, are an all-year-round factor, which are doing, creating huge amounts of problems. Where we are, there's just the roads are just full of them. It's terrible. But ultimately, I think everyone should be putting cars on all-season tyres and just... they're modern stuff. I'm very clear. I'm here as Ben from Vintage Tyres. We do have a modern car arm called New Forest Tyres, which won't go into that now. But, ultimately, if you've got a modern car, all-season tyres should be the way.
Mm, interesting. Mm.
I found a few years ago, I've got, funnily enough, an old BMW from the 80s, and it snowed, and one of the neighbours, I was going to try and get into town where I lived, and the neighbour said, oh, you're driving, I'll have a lift off you. 15 minutes later, I still hadn't managed to get out of the space. Because it was just like... And I lived on a hill, and we got to the point where the car was in the middle of the road, and pretty much that was it. And the neighbour sort of like, well, I could have walked by now, thanks a lot. And I think, well, you could at least give me a hand to get the car back in the space. Because obviously, as soon as it got off the dry tarmac, it was going nowhere. So, I think probably an old BMW rear-wheel drive is the worst, one of the worst vehicles to try and take out in the snow anyway.
I think it's true. 2010, I think, was the last really, really bad winter we had as a country. And there were loads of BMWs stuck on drives, it was a real problem. So modern, relatively modern cars that had all traction control, but there was still rear-wheel drive and there was no weight at the back and there was no traction. People were putting on winter tyres and suddenly saying, I can drive my car again, I can't believe it.
The cynic would say that 2023, 2024, that there are just as many BMWs stuck on driveways. They're just broken down because they make their, make their engines out of plastic now.
that may well be the case, but I think there's a lot of modern cars get a terrible panning in which these days, don't they? The reliability rates are pretty poor, actually. A lot of stuff. Unless you're on a Lexus, apparently, that's the best, most reliable car going, but...
Well, I mean, have you looked under the bonnet of one? I mean, honestly, I was in a scrapyard the other day and lifted the bonnet of Jag S type, hoping to find a petrol in there, and didn't. It's a diesel. Oh my goodness! The petrol is bad enough, but the diesel. I do know which way is up mechanically, but I can I stand there and go, I don't know what that is. I actually don't know what that is. I can make guesses as to what I think the bits might do. you know what I mean? I mean, and everything's absolutely shoehorned in.
It is. It's almost guaranteed to go wrong, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like you, I'm pretty mechanically minded. I've been working on vehicles of one type or another for more than 30 years. The other day, I changed the battery on my modern Volkswagen Passat. I've got like I'm pretty boring. I've had pretty much every version of the Passat since the day now. And at the Auburn Estates and all with the fast versions. I started off with the GL5 back in the early 90s. Especially, I had the Quattro engine in it. It was good fun, non-turbocharged Quattro engine. But I changed the battery on our latest Passat, which has got 300 brake horsepower. It's quite good fun. I changed the battery. That is all I did. Yep. It's a massive battery, half the size of the engine, basically, because it's a stop-start thing. Anyway, I changed the battery, and the car pretty much was like Armageddon. Every single thing, when I get to the battery, every single light goes in. Well, the car's knackered. You're done for. And I just about started. I managed to drive. I drove for a mile. Everything was like, oh, no, it's all right now. What the hell? What was that all about? Absolutely ridiculous.
Have you got
the most ridiculous?
If you've had all the Passats, have you got all the pin badges as well?
No, not I'm sad to say. No. My latest one actually is a bit, and that is a modern car. I have got classic cars and bikes as well, but the modern car is good fun, but it's a bit dull. Doesn't it's fast, but it makes no noise. Mm-hmm. It's all very kind of muted. which is a bit dull. It's got the same engine as the R32, or not the R32, what's the Golf Type R? Whatever it is, that one, four-cylinder, turbocharged.
You're shipping together VR6 and R32 there, aren't you? You're making one model out of them.
Well, the one I had before, the previous fast Passat was actually a V6, and that made a lovely noise, and that was really fast as well. Mm-hmm. So that was like
It is sad that these well, to me it is, the newer models are obviously faster, more powerful, apparently more economical. I'm not quite so certain about that. But
no, I'm not sure either.
No. But of course they're all four, and doubtless that is, they're all four cylinder now. So you do lose that aural pleasure of the V6, definitely.
You really do. I mean, there's a bit of dump valvery. You can hear it whistling, not in the really knobbish way you'd have with a GT Turbo back in the day, or various Imprezas. I do like Imprezas, I like both of those actually, but it's not overdone, but there was a bit of hissing, but that's all.
That's the fun.
let me throw out a topic for debate here. Imagine you've got...
Life?
So, imagine you've got something to live for, Tony. Tyres, obviously, on a car... When you want grip, you put the tyres on the rear. So you can have, if you've got one decent set of tyres, one decent pair of tyres, you put them on the back, because then, if you're circling, cornering the car, it keeps the rear end planted. You can't go anywhere, the back end's skidding. So let's imagine you've got a front-wheel drive car and just two snow chains. Where would you put them?
At the back.
On the front wheels or on the back?
At the back, I think, ultimately. You probably shouldn't.
Because front-wheel drive, are your front wheels going to be scrambling? And I don't have an answer to this.
It's good. That's a good question.
It's a really good question. Because, as you say, ultimately, you're trying to avoid rear wheels. So you're trying to avoid oversteer, aren't you, ultimately?
Yeah.
I've done the testing at Myra, where you go in the concentric circles with a vehicle with that not very good tyres on the back.
Bleep.
And apologies. Sorry, they were really bad tyres.
That's all right.
And that was chaotic. That was chaotic. The moment you've got good tyres in the rear, But your point, actually, specifically, I answered very quickly. You had a front wheel drive car. You should always put the best tyres to the rear, as for the reasons discussed. With snow chains, probably snow socks, I suggest. You're probably right, actually. It's got to be good to fit those to the front to get the traction. But you want to make sure your rear tyres are really sound, ultimately.
So put the tyres on the front with snow chains and the decent ones on the back without.
Yeah, ultimately, you should have the best tyres all the time, front and rear, shouldn't you? Match sets. They insist on it in certain parts of Europe, but not here. You can have four different tyres, which is unbelievably dangerous.
It really is. My son, who knows nothing about cars at all, went and had... I said, "Go, you need a couple of tyres." And he'd always... There was, what was it? A set of four Continentals on there. And he came back from a well-known brand of high street fitters with the two Conti's still on the back and two Michelin on the front. Now that's not a problem in itself, obviously, but the front ones that had been changed were all seasons and the rears were summers, and I thought, well-worn summers. And so I phoned them up and spoke to them about it, and they said, well, that's perfectly all right. And I said, well, technically and legally it may be, but it doesn't strike me as being particularly clever for a novice driver to have mixed seasons. And what do you think? Was I off beam to have a go at them?
No, I mean, I think what I want to see always is new tyres to the rear, period. That the best tyres go to the back. That should be the thing. A lot of tyre fitters don't understand that premise, however. They assume that a front-wheel drive car needs the best tyres at the front, if it's not in the snow, right?
Yeah.
And rear-wheel drive car needs the best tyres at the rear. But the deal is always, always at the back, because every car, front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, four-wheel drive, if it breaks away at the rear, it's going to be harder to control. We all know that. Understeer is easy to control. Take your foot off the accelerator quickly and you're done. With oversteer, you've got to put more effort in. So, no, I think you were right to question it. But, I mean, unfortunately, I think the standard of training perhaps in some high street... In some tyre places, typically, it's just not great. They're not going to get that concept.
Well, the deal I did with them in the end was I said, look, you know, let's do, you know, at cost or thereabouts, can you please put another two all seasons to match on the back? Needlessly, in a sense, but because I said I just don't like the concept of having two all seasons and two summers.
That no, just, it was a surprising choice that they decided to put. It's probably all they had on the shelf. They should probably. I mean, ultimately, it's not going to. Was it a fairly cooking regular type of car? Was it anything particularly?
it's got about 70 horsepower at best. So right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, yep.
So yeah, it's not the end of the world, but really, you should be. If the customers just want a replacement tyre, it should be matching almost like for like. Yeah. Maybe not the same brand, but at least a similar. At least it's basically it should be a summer tyre. If you've got a summer tyre,
that's
on,
what I
on
yes.
the car already.
Yeah.
Ultimately, yeah, that should be. So my guess there is they just said they fitted what they had.
Yeah.
which is not great. Yeah, it's just it's rubbish, isn't it? Really.
Yeah,
I mean, you at least advise the customer. We're thinking about doing this. What do you think? And he might go, oh no, you know, might phone his dad. Yeah. But which is probably what he should have done. Yeah. What they should have done. They should have given him the choice.
Yeah. No. Good question though, Mike.
I will just to come back to that point though, Mike. I think it's important that if people, most people wouldn't necessarily need snow chains or socks if they've got if you've got a half decent set of all seasons on. That's going to do most. Most of your snow work and ice work, so you wouldn't really need them.
You don't see snow chains anymore, do you? I mean, I don't sort of tend to move up into Scotland and in the farm tracks or anything, but certainly around where I sometimes go over to Wales and so on, and you don't see snow chains anymore. They used to be everywhere.
They're quite hard to fit, and they've been usurped by, you know, the tyre sock, which is an easier thing. You know, we're very much kind of like a what's easiest, and the tyre sock is put it over,
just,
it's done.
Just explain what a tyre sock is for
basically, it is, as it sounds, it's like a like a bag that basically fits over the top of the tyre and gives it, over the whole of the tyre, and gives additional grip. It's a very simple, it effectively does the same job as a snow chain without the clanking, without the falling off, and without the half an hour each wheel freezing your fingers off to fit it. It's just on. It's good, but it's no substitute for a good tyre. Have good tyres first. And most of the time, if you've got good all-season or winters on, you're not going to need these snow chains.
What about...
Or socks, sorry.
What about that spray stuff? Traction in a can. I've never tried it. Any good?
Never tried it. It sounds a bit snake oily to me, frankly. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that, you know, that does stuff, but... No, I can't see that.
Concept of it is you spray it. I think you spray it on the tyre.
Well, in front of the car?
Yeah.
Some with a red flag spraying it.
Set fire to it. You end up with two nice tracks that are melted. No,
that's perfect.
Actually, that would work.
You go
actually,
up in a plane and you cover the entire country in it, and then everyone's all right.
No, I think the idea is that it's not, whereas socks and chains are to be driven on and to give you grip for your whole journey, whatever that may be. The idea of this stuff is to get you up a sticky or a slippery driveway.
But what does it do? What does it do?
It must melt.
Kind of like a glue solution. Bizarrely enough, Pontiac in the 1960s offered it as an option on some of their cars in the States. And it's just like a jet spray. I mean, we today, it's in an aerosol can and you spray it on and it's sort of the opposite of if you coat a frying pan in non-grip, you know, oil and stuff. This is like a gluey solution and it supposedly helps the tyre stick. But again, never tried it, and certainly Pontiac only offered it for a year, and then it went away. So I'm guessing it didn't work then either.
Yeah. Like your description of your kitchenware, Mike, non-grip frying pans.
Oh yeah, those sausages sliding all over the place. Off they go, chasing around the room like some sort of party game.
Vintage tyres then, 1962.
Yes.
Set up by Lord Montague himself, am I right?
Yeah, by Edward Lord Montague, the previous Lord Montague, and a gentleman called Philip Pollock, who was a modern tyre dealer with classic vintage veteran leanings. Effectively, Dunlop had said, right, we're done with making classic tyres. We'll still make them, but we're not going to market them anymore. It's too much of a pain. So Philip Pollock, Lord Montague, took over that side of it. And at the time, it was very much vintage. You know, literally sort of, you know, sort of all pre-war stuff. Some veteran, you know, London to Brighton stuff as well. A lot of beaded edge. So basically, that was it. Dunlop was a business for the first, probably the first 10 years. And then other brands were added as they went forward. And now here we are with all the brands we have. You know, 13, 15 major brands. So it's from there. But that's it in a nutshell, really. That's how it started.
You're not just a retailer, though, are you? You actually manufacture or, you know, have tyres manufactured. Is that right?
We do. That's right. We have tyres manufactured for us. We have a couple of plants, one in Thailand. We were building tyres at Avon in Melksham, but not anymore. But we actually own about 100 moulds, and 40 of those are now in Europe. And we've made under the Avon brand for us, all under licence. So the brand will continue.
Interesting.
What's the general sort of typical car that you sell tyres for? Are they British of the 60s? Are they sports cars? Is there a pattern at all?
Yeah, I think there is. I think our sweet spot is sort of 60s, 70s sports and saloons, really. But we do everything either side. And we're not really, strictly speaking, vintage. If you take the truest meaning of vintage from the car magazine element, you know, we're not, strictly speaking, sort of there. We are now kind of everything from sort of veteran through to modern classic, and have been for years, realistically. But the vintage name now, I mean, you know, I always use this thing. My daughter says to me, yeah, I've got a pair of jeans, it's like 15 years old. She says, those jeans are vintage, Dad. Yeah, I know, thanks. But it's the vintage in the modern description is just old and cool. So actually, I quite like vintage has come full circle to actually mean everything we kind of embrace, really.
And if you go on the Vintage Tyres website, Mike, you'll find that if you do the pull down thing to have a look for tyres, I enjoyed doing this. Whereas normally you get, what do we go from? Sort of 135 or 145 upwards, and you get to 285 or 325 or whatever the biggest is. But Vintage Tyres, you get a load of entertaining stuff on there as well that means nothing to me. Like if I said to you, Ben, what the hell is a 525/1050-15?
What?
525/1050-15.
Sorry, it's an Avon racing tyre, and I have to admit, even to me, so 15 basically is the wheel diameter.
Right.
Yeah. It's,
good knowledge, though. Good knowledge.
But it's crazy, because the Avon stuff, even to me, as a sort of a tyre nerd, the Avon racing stuff is like another world aside. Okay. It's absolutely crazy. But I mean, we've got stuff. You've got things like 880, 815, 105 beaded edge tyres. And old tyres used to be measured on the whole overall diameter, not just the wheel, not the wheel diameter. Now we're very much used to talking about, aren't we? 14-inch, 15-inch. Back in the day, it's the same with the race tyres. They're talking overall diameter in that case. Yeah. So it throws you completely.
They do that with big off-road tyres still, don't they? They call them 30s or something. I don't know. Is that right? Did I just make that number up?
But something like that. That and tractors, the same deal. Tractors the same. It's very strange. Very strange. But it's just, and you have to just get your head in the game when you're talking about it. We don't get too many calls about tractors. We do a little bit of racing. But, you know, when it comes in, you've been talking about sort of TCV tyres that morning and Jaguar E-type tyres. So it's like, hang on, okay, it's reset. We're talking about it now. Because it's a crazy mixed up world. And radials use, obviously, metric and imperial measurements for the same, on the same tyre.
Now, that was a question, and I can prove it. Look, on this piece of paper here, that was one of my intelligent questions, which I thought I probably wouldn't get to. Wait, just very briefly, because I know we're talking winter, but this does, you know, fascinating. We don't need to go down the metric tyre route. That's a conversation for another day. But why is my tyre a 205/55/16, as in 205, 205 millimetres, and then a percentage for the height of the sidewall, and then an imperial measurement for the wheel?
It's crazy.
It's insanity.
It's insanity. Yeah, who could make that up? I mean, basically, as you no doubt know, 205 is the section width. Put your hands either side of the tyre, that's a section. The percentage profile is percentage of that width. And then obviously the last number is the diameter of the wheel. That's it. And it's quite simple, but it is ridiculous. Now, and why we ever got to a situation where we're using metric and imperial the same measurement? Well, I would never have chosen to do that, but that was the way it was done. And I suppose
your alternative there is going to be, if it's a swap the other way around, you're going to have like 8.81 versus 302.7 as a measurement, and gets even more confusing.
Well, the funny thing is, when you talk about cross-plies, the measurements are much simpler. Take a 5.25.16, for example. Mm-hmm. That's 5.25 inches across by 16 inch wheel. Very simple, inch and inch. There's no profile mentioned, because profiles with the cross-ply are typically 96 to 100%. Very tall. You look mystified. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I'm just thinking
about... That's just my face. I'm not.
That's his natural resting face.
Yeah. I just got into standby for a moment there. The light's still on.
In the 70s, you know, that's when low profile tyres started, wasn't it? Roughly when we moved from a sort of an 80% section to 70 was considered low profile.
It is, yeah. In our world, 70% is pretty low, really. You know, but yeah, that's right. The technology didn't exist previously, so to make a tyre that would actually, you could have a lower profile, lower look. Yeah, that was 60s, 70s is kind of the era we look at. And now we're in an era where we get cars coming in with 30%, profiles, which is, they're difficult to fit. Yeah. They're really uncomfortable to ride on.
Yeah.
And the manufacturers do all sorts of things to make them more comfortable, but it's still a really low profile tyre.
It's fundamentally a flawed design.
It's not great. Basically, a lot about tyre size and profile is about aesthetics. It's not about dynamics. Mm. It's just how do you want this car to look? We want massive wheels. We want them to fill the wheel arches. Mm. Right. That's what we've got to do. And that's the way it's gone. And it's more about the look than it is about performance, in my view.
Devil's advocate for a second as well. It's also obviously the larger the rim, the bigger brakes you can get in the car.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, and it's something Tony and I have discussed at length many times, is you get into an older car with a much thicker tyre, and it just rides so much nicer.
Every time.
Whereas you get in a new car, you get in a modern hire car, it's like bang, bang, you know, driving over a stone, and right on the spine there.
It's not only that, it's about confidence as well, actually. And if you put me in a car with narrower tyres and a higher profile, I will naturally, A, enjoy it more and probably drive it faster, because my confidence levels are greater. It's much less twitchy, it's much less tramline-y. The irony being that actually manufacturers have ended up making sport models that are substantially less sporty to drive than the ordinary ones. Yet, we all fall for it to some degree or other and end up buying the sport pack because it does, it looks better.
It does.
That's the problem.
But it comes down to that, definitely, definitely. But I know, I agree with that point. And I've got an MG Midget, which is generally driven much faster than anything modern, because it's you just know what you're doing. You know its limits. I mean, I've had the car for nearly 30 years, so I kind of know its limits. I know my own limits as well, which are pretty limited. And you know, that's what, but it just feels, plus it feels faster and it's more fun.
Yeah, of course.
But, it does ride pretty well on those like 70 low profile tyres that are on it. It does ride very well.
Which midget have you got? Which wheel arch and which engine?
It's a round wheel arch with a 1275 and a supercharger.
Ooh.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, it's pretty fast. It's on its third engine. It started off an A series. I was one of the first to put it onto K series, and then it went back to A series about 15 years ago. So I got fed up with K series. Okay. So. Yeah, it's good fun. It's about 120 brake horsepower, and you know, it's pretty light.
Which is a lot in a car that size.
Yeah, and it makes a good sound. It's good fun.
What shape is your wheel arch?
Well, it's something you ask with a midget, square or round.
Yeah. Clearly,
it's a logical question.
So I've got 175/70/13. I normally run Avon CR6 ZZs, which are quite grippy. Mm. Yeah, so it's kind of, it was one of the few tyres I could put on it that would actually keep the thing on the road, because when I first converted it, I was running on, I think, 165s, and the compound was too hard, and the car was, because it's got a lot of spec going on there, quite a lot of suspension spec. It's quite stiffly sprung. Still rides okay, but without those ZZs on, it is a bit of a monster. To be honest with you, it's just a bit too powerful.
So midget, Passat, anything else in the garage?
Yeah, I've got a BMW R65 motorbike as well.
Ah.
And a Honda VFR 400 motorbike.
Because you also do tyres for motorcycles.
We do. Yeah, only a sort in a small way. It's quite a small range, really. Because to be honest, it's a really competitive market. So we can really sort of dabble in that, really.
You do that because you've got presumably existing clients who are loyal, who maybe come to you for car tyres and bike as well.
Some of that, yeah. And also, we just sort of cherry pick the very best of the Avon and the Dunlop ranges. And we've also got some of our own bike tyres, but in Bead Edge, which is a bit very specialist. No one else pretty much makes Bead Edge. It's pretty much us that makes them. So that's kind of like for veteran motorcycles. And
talking of obscure, on your website, you're going to need to answer this for me. I clicked around it and was none the wiser. What on earth is a tyre flap of between 17 and 27 inches? And why would I want a tyre flap? What is it?
Basically, we use them when we're fitting truck tyres. It basically protects the inner tube from sort of anything inside the rim. Keeps the inner tube safe. This is like a big old, this is a big piece of rubber. It's the most unfortunate name. We do chuckle about that occasionally. We have to blank that one out. So. Yeah.
Why do you think I asked?
Yeah. No, exactly. You basically to crack under pressure. But it basically is for that. It's effectively a tube protection device. In a smaller way, in like if you take a spoked wheel, we'll have a thing called a rim band that goes around the inside that stops the spokes poking into the tube and damaging it. In a larger way, that's what a flap does in very basic terms. It's not a big thing for us. We sell a handful of those, but we keep a few on the shelf.
It doesn't really pay your pension selling those.
Definitely not. No, it's quite a rare groove.
I'm right out of tyre flaps.
So sorry, that wasn't meant to be, but it clearly.
No, it was good.
It, so.
Yeah,
it's good. It's better than a lot of the jokes we've made. Something else that I learned probably about 15, 20 years ago when I was talking to you guys for a magazine article, and it surprised me, and I wonder how many people are actually aware. The life of a tyre is about 10 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's even if it's up on a shelf.
Yeah.
If ultraviolet light gets to it, you don't even have to have put it on a car. After a decade, it's probably not really usable, is that correct?
It's true enough. I think it's less about ultraviolet light. Obviously, that's a factor if the tyre is outside. It's just about the hardening of a product, of like rubber. It hardens naturally. You can stick it in cotton wool in the dark, in your, you know, the wardrobe, and it's going to harden. A lot of people think we're obsessed with tread depth. Everything, it's not your decent tread depth, that's fine. And some people think, well, I've got my tyre's 25 years old, but they've got loads of tread, therefore... They're fine. Problem is, that tread is as hard as hell and there's no grip. Take it out on a damp morning, you're going to lose that car. So that's the... tread depth is a bit of a nonsense, really. We're too married to that concept. Mm. And you say 10 years, and I tend to agree with that, but I have taken tyres off a car at 6 years that are rock hard, that were being, have been used. You know, it's just certain compounds work better than others.
I've got a friend with a Morris Minor that's about a 1955 and it's still on the original tyres that he left the factory with. Oh, and no, he's really proud of this. And everyone who talks to him goes, get them changed. And he goes, no, it's part of the car, it's part of the original. I mean, it won't do more than about 30 miles an hour anyway, but at some point they are going to explode because they're like teak. You know, like a hardwood. I don't think you'd even get them off.
Well, when we've had tyres like that before, I kid you not, we've had to actually cut them off with a grinder.
Wow.
And, you know, that's just, they're that hard. It is like, it's so hard, like a hard wood. And you think, what the hell? But it's got tread. Yeah. Oh, stop it. So, you know, we have to sort of, you know, just divorce ourselves from this concept that tread is the all be all and end all. I mean, I'm afraid there's too much talk of that. We just need to think about, how old is something, particularly on a classic vehicle? How old is that tyre? It's very easy to tell. The date code on the side, you know, four figures typically. First two of the week, second two of the year. Take a look. And you know, if you're not sure, give us a shout. We'll let you know. It's just tyre safety. It's so easy to overlook. And people spend so much money doing their cars up and their bikes up. And they think, bloody hell, I've got to the end of that. The tyres are a bit expensive. I won't worry about the tyres. They've got a bit of tread. And that's dangerous.
Maybe you should suggest a new policy of take a look at a picture of yourself when your tyre was made. And then you'll begin to understand that your tyre has probably aged a little as well.
Yes, well, it's a very good shout, isn't it? Yeah, that's
it. How do you come up with these good ideas? Don't I?
No, there's certainly something in that.
as usual, left me speechless there, Tim. One other thing that I'm sure doesn't happen anymore, but I'll throw it in because it's just occurred to me. Back in the day, people used to re-groove tyres when they got so warm. Mm. They would have like these sort of hot, you know, wire methods of re-grooving tyres. I'm presuming that never happens anymore.
It doesn't happen with car tyres. It does happen with truck tyres, because truck tyres are so expensive that there are programs. Michelin, for example, do basically re-grooving. That, you know, you buy a tyre and you can have that tyre sort of re-groove. It's not a process that we use anymore. Remolds, etc., as they were known, is something that no one touches. They were just dangerous, mostly. I mean, that was the problem. Mm. There were so many bad, you know, people fitting a remold here, a regular radial here, issues of how they performed. You know, not a good look.
But I'd always assume if you've got a tyre with, let's say, sort of 3 millimetres of tread, and you wear that down so it's smooth like a slick, if you're then going to put more tread in it, sure, it's a lot thinner, isn't it, that tyre? It's going to be under a lot more pressure.
What you've done, you've basically gone back to some various stages. The tread is just refitted, re-vulcanized to that, basically.
So they put a new layer of rubber on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're not cutting further into the canvas. It's a good point. But basically, yes, you're adding extra rubber, which will have the tread already cut in it, typically. That's how that works. Because a carcass of tyre can last longer.
Wouldn't have thought that'd be cost effective, to be honest.
That's why it's not done anymore, because now with the influx for modern vehicles of so many sort of cheap tyres, budget tyres are a huge thing for some, you know, a lot of people. And you can buy a tyre for the average Focus for like 30 quid, you know, a new tyre. It might not be any good, but you can buy one at that price.
I do run budget tyres on all my cars. I mean, they're not particularly fast cars anyway, and I'm not that enthusiastic a driver. I'm never, you know, not like Tony going for the apex of every bend and so on. So stopwatch running on the dashboard. But yeah, I was trying to think the last time I had a tyre put on a car that I looked at it and thought, oh, I've heard of those. Because they all seem to be just like random 9 Scrabble letters. Hyong Pom kind of. And I think, what's that?
My favourite for many years now has been one called, made by a company called Fate. Now, I'm not saying Fate is good or bad, but would you put a tyre on called Fate? I wouldn't. Another one, Triangle. Have a Triangle. Yeah, yeah, obviously. Yeah.
I had one put on called Wang Kong.
It's only one letter missed. Anyway, yes.
Exactly. Yeah, they saw me coming. Yeah.
I think what is important is you probably should, but as a rule of thumb, recognise or have a feeling you might have seen that name before. I'm not saying, because there's really good tyres coming out of China. No question, there are some good tyres coming out of China. There's some great tyres coming out of India. Take Apollo in India. I'm not plugging them particularly, but they're really good. They do a brilliant range of winter and all-season tyres as well as summer tyres. But again, that sounds like they're sponsoring me. They're not. I'm just pulling that out of thin air. So just because of where it's come from, but I do think, just look at it, because the tyre labelling tells us that it will do this, it will do that, but actually, I'm not convinced that a tyre that costs 30 quid is actually as good as one that costs 100 quid in the same size. It's just not. It simply cannot be, you know. So try to aim for a brand you might recognise, or talk to someone like us who know the brands that are out there that are any good.
It's refreshing to, and I've kept quiet. It's refreshing to hear me quiet.
I was enjoying that. Yeah.
to hear you, Ben, basically evangelising the same thing as I do. I have a colleague at a place where I work who, from time to time, and he has a lovely BMW estate, a new one, and before that an Audi A8 V8 and whatnot. And so he buys a succession of really nice cars and then shods it with utter junk, and I just can't understand it. And I say to this guy, look, you've bought this beautiful car that you know, hundreds of millions of pounds has gone into developing, and you're now going to the tyre place at the end of the street and saying, I'll have the very cheapest product you've got, please. And I don't understand that, because you've spent tens of thousands of pounds on the car and then you go and try and save £35 on a tyre. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And it's a classic. It's a classic thing. We see it all the time. People, I think the thing is, I don't know about your colleague, but it's basically a lot of people buy a car they can't quite afford. Mm-hmm. And they might get it on sort of like higher purchase. Yeah. So back in the day. Yeah. And the first time they've got to buy tyres, it's like, blimey, they're expensive. For example, an X5 owner just plucking a car out the air, gargantuan tyres on it that cost a fortune if you buy the right tyres at BMW and specified. So people go, I'll have some Fates. Not Fate make them, but you know, they have the cheapest brand they can find. They're going to stick on there because it's the difference between a £400 tyre and a £100 tyre. Mm. And you can't blame them, but it is really dangerous because basically these tyres are nowhere near up to the quality that you need it to be. And as you say, you know, you've bought a car that's high performance, it needs the best tyres on it.
Dragging it back towards winter, which I can with the, via the X5 that you just mentioned, I I did have use of one for a short while in a winter. It may have been 2010, you know, it was around that time anyway, but it was a sport model. So it had the bone shaker suspension and, rickety, 20-inch cart wheels on it or whatever it was. Anyway, it snowed and I had to go and use this thing, but I had to turn up in my Discovery first, an old Discovery TDI with all terrains on it, which just cut through the snow. And I didn't actually, to be honest with you, even really think about it. I mean, you just drive carefully, but it was snowy, big deal, that's fine. And I had to swap into this BMW... BMW X5 got about 15 yards before it was just totally stuck. I mean, completely stuck. And so in answer to your question of right at the beginning, Mike, of you know, summer versus winter versus all terrain, etc. You know, there's a right tyre for the right season, and you know that BMW on its summer tyres with sort of steamroller width that they were. Absolutely, totally and utterly useless.
But I think that really makes another point, isn't it? The fact, obviously, that's a four-wheel drive vehicle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can have a four-wheel drive vehicle, you have a front-wheel drive vehicle. Front-wheel drive vehicle on good all-season tyres will climb a ski slope. Four-wheel drive, I never hope. And I'm not making that, that's not an apocryphal tale. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. That is the truth. People say, I've got four-wheel drive, but you might as well have, you know, your non-stick frying pan element on it. You know, it's just not, it's just, they're going nowhere. They're going nowhere because you need that friction at the point the tyres touch something, don't you? But if you've got the wrong tyres on, and obviously the wider they are, the worse that makes it, of course.
Best and worst cars I think I've ever seen for winter. And the best one was a guy who had an Austin 7 who lived near me, and that thing would go out any weather because the thin little tyres, it cut straight through the snow onto the tarmac. And he could take that. He was doing like 25 mile an hour, but it would go everywhere. And I think probably the worst, I was out in a rotten snowstorm with somebody in a 4x4 because I wouldn't take my cars out. And there was a guy with a Maserati Merak SS crawling down this icy road, a bright red SS. So I don't know whether someone had taken him out on a photo shoot. It's the only thing I could occur was it was probably one of these, like, you know, five car photo shoots. No, you've got to be there. We're on deadline. Like, oh, God, all right then. But woo! It's a Merak SS. What a wonderful choice to go out in the winter.
That's just terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. But put them on the right tyres, you'd probably be okay. You know, that's the thing.
Can I round this off with a confession, Ben?
Yes.
I hit your car in the car park.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I was on the wrong tyres. Well, the first bit isn't the confession because this would be weird, but in my lounge at home I have beer mats with the vintage tyre branding on, your superb beer mats. Yep, which excellent are superb. So they are scattered around.
That's
the
where
living
they
room
went.
We made lots, Mike. It's okay. It's fine.
Because your beer mats and your design work for your business, your adverts and whatnot is absolutely terrific.
The
cartoon style, I find it so appealing. I mean, I genuinely do. It's not just because you're sitting in front of me and we're talking.
Thank you.
I actually look at those ads and I enjoy looking at the advert. Yeah, when I'm flicking through.
Kind.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Anyway, the confession is, I've I was going to say copied and stolen. That's probably too far. I've created an evocation of your idea, and there is now the Car Chum beer mat, which which actually went down extremely well at the NEC Classic Motor Show, where I mean we really couldn't stop people from tearing them out of our hands. He said, exaggerating wildly, but
tearing them up. You know. Yeah.
Anyway, it's a great idea, and you can, of course, on your website get all your merch, can't you?
Yeah. Thank you for that's very kind. I mean, I felt when I joined the company 8.5 years ago, we didn't really have much of a kind of an image. We had an image problem, I think. I think we'd worked for a long time as a sort of one of the few companies doing what we do. And obviously people come in, to the business as well. We felt we needed to really distinguish ourselves again from just being this kind of a company that'd been around forever, assuming everyone knew who we were. And they didn't. That's just one of the biggest mistakes you can make in business is to assume that everyone knows you, and they just don't. Because we know people, literally, I meet people down the road, so Vintage Tyres, where are you? Oh, in Bewley. In Bewley? Bloody hell. It's just that sort of thing. So we have to sort of make a point. And the artwork was a really key point for us. First thing I did was change the logo, much to the owners. I don't own the company, I run the company, but much to the owners' chagrin, I changed the logo pretty much in the first 2 weeks and didn't ask them. And that went down really well. And then from the logo, which they now, I think, like, from the logo, I thought, well, let's extrapolate. What can we do with the adverts? The adverts previously were just lots of tyres. I thought, got lots of tyres, but what can we do more? And we worked and worked and worked on it. We worked with a really talented designer who just gets my stupid ideas and turns them into these beautiful ads. So,
keep going, keep creating them. They're worth your money, because I enjoy that. And actually, there is an art to a good advert. And when you're thumbing a magazine, and I do still like to actually buy paper magazines, finding a nice advert, an interesting advert, is a joy.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you, Ben. I mean, that's been brilliant. So, Vintage Tyres, you're at Bewley. You've got another hub at Bicester?
That's right, we've got a fitting centre at Bicester. So we fit tyres here at Bewley, but our main base here is here at Bewley. We fit here, also at Bicester. We just fit tyres basically there as well, which is useful for those who are not in the south.
So if someone needs tyres, they can look at the website, they can give you a call, they can get them sent out to them, presumably. You do a mail order?
Yeah, we ship out every day, pretty much. Every single day of the week, we're shipping. Yeah, all over the country, all over the world.
Brilliant. I'll be in touch with you about some white walls for the BMW.
Tire
they
going to
look classy?
That look awesome. Yeah, obviously.
Many thanks to Ben for joining Car Chum on this episode. Paper and pens at the ready if you'd like the contacts. You can find Vintage Tyres and get your own set of flaps. Grow up at www.vintagetires.com. And talking of websites, don't forget to give us a thumbs up, please, on our socials. Much appreciated. Just search Car Chum. Or head over to our website, of course, and leave us a message directly there, www.car-chum.com. We'll be back in a fortnight, so until then, pip pip.